Start the clock. The session is being recorded. All right, marvelous. Well, thanks so much for everyone for coming to another Warwick Thursdays. I'm your host, Tim Leach, and we have a very special guest. He's been with us a couple of years before, Stephen Arion, who has, you know, he's got 6 books out already and a 7th and an 8th on the way, which is frankly too much. He's the author of The Age of Darkness and The Age of Dread trilogies from Orbit Books. His first book was a finalist for the David Gemmell Morningstar Award. Battlemage won the inaugural Hellfest Inferno Award in France after a public vote. And he's got another book out in June called The Coward, which has a cover that is so beautiful. I was deeply jealous the moment that I saw it when it was being shared around on Twitter. They've really knocked it out of the park on that one. But he's going to talk us about all things fantasy writing, his kind of path and journey to kind of publication. And we'll have a chance to ask plenty of questions later on as well. But thank you so much, Stephen. Take it away.
Okay, so I'm going to talk for about half an hour. If you see me looking at my phone, it's because I've got a timer on, so I don't talk too much and don't waffle. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about getting published the traditional way, as that's what I did. I'm going to talk a bit about the publishing business, agents, the typical route to getting published today, and then we'll have some time for questions at the end. So getting published today is quite different. I'm going to take you back to the old days when I first started submitting, and there was a thing, there's traditional publishing, which is, you know, you get an agent, you get a publisher, and they put your book out. The other way back in the day of having a book out was something we called vanity publishing. This is where you could pay a company. You'd send your book. They don't care what state it was in. You'd send your book off to them. They would print it and then send it back to you. And then you could hand sell that book if you wanted to. And effectively, that was what self-publishing meant back in the day. Now, self-publishing is a completely different ballgame. It's completely transformed, and a lot of authors do it. Some start with self-publishing and move into traditional publishing. Some never do. So I'll give you 3 examples. So a friend of mine, James Oswald, who writes crime fiction, he wrote 2 Inspector MacLean novels. He put the first one for free on Amazon and the second one at a cost of, you know, $4.99 or something on ebook. The first one obviously sold really, really well, and everyone then went on and bought the second book, so much so that he attracted the attention of publishers, and he then got an agent. He's now had 11 Inspector MacLean novels published, a fantasy trilogy, and he started a second ongoing crime series with a new protagonist. Another friend of mine, Steve McHugh, who writes urban fantasy, he self-published his first book, put it on Amazon, and he was then contacted by Amazon publishing arm, who are called 47 North, and they'd noticed it was selling very well, and they said to him, "We'd like to work with you, you better go and get yourself an agent." So he then had to go and get an agent, who then negotiated a contract with Amazon 47 North. And he's now had, I think it's about 14 books out with Amazon, and he sold over 1 million copies of all of his books over the last probably eight years, maybe 10 years or so. A third example of mine is a friend called Ben Galley. So he started self-publishing back in 2010, and he stayed with self-publishing. He's now had, I think, about 10 or 11 books out, and he's just brought out a new book. But what's quite interesting is Ben recently got an agent. The reason being that he's obviously doing the ebooks and the physical books through Amazon, but obviously he is not negotiating the audio rights, and this is something I'll talk about later a bit more. Plus, he's not able to sell the book internationally, but his agent is. So his agent can take a finished trilogy and approach various publishers overseas and try and sell it to them. And he's also now looking at writing some fiction that's more commercial, that he'd look at getting published the traditional way. So there are a lot more options today than there ever were back in the day when it was just traditional and vanity. Now you get authors that move from one side to the other, some that are hybrid authors, and it's something, you know, I've thought about. I'm traditionally published at the moment, but there's some projects I know the audience might be quite small, or it might be a bit outside the commercial area that someone wants to go for, but there's no reason that I wouldn't want to self-publish it myself in the future. So it's something that I'm thinking about. So there are more options now than there ever were in the past. So I'll tell you a bit about my story. The full story is a bit too long to go into. It would take me hours to do. So I'm going to give you an abbreviated version. if you want the full version, then there's a thing on my, I've done a YouTube channel where I started doing writing advice and also interviewing other authors, and I've done a longer version on there. So my path started around the year 2000, and it's fairly typical. To take you back in time that far, the internet was pretty young in that days, and in some ways the process has not really changed too much. What you tend to do then was buy the writer's and artist's yearbook. This is something that still comes out today. It's like a big dictionary thing, like a contents thing that has all of the agencies, all of the agents within them, all of the genres that each agent is interested in, contact details, and these days it'll have their obviously website and that sort of stuff. And you can then click on, go from the website they have or from the book and find out their individual guidelines, because each agent will have something slightly different. But back then, you couldn't do it through the internet. It wasn't possible. It was a paper world, and everything was done with a self-addressed envelope. So what you do would, you write a book, send off the first five or six chapters, put them in a self-addressed envelope, and send it off. And then you'd wait anywhere from 3 to 6 months for it to come back. And the best you'd usually get would be like a printed postcard that would say, "Dear insert name, unfortunately, you've not been successful." And that was about as much as you got. They didn't really tell you anything else. They didn't give you any feedback. Occasionally, you might get a line or two that would say, "This is quite good." Or you'd get nothing. But most of the time, you never knew why your books were being rejected. And that was really, really tough. So I did this over the course of several books. I'd write a book, I'd edit it, I'd get friends to read it, I'd edit it again, I'd annoy my friends again. I'd go through the writer's and artist yearbook, I'd find all of those that did fantasy, I'd highlight them, and I'd send the book out. And you'd send it out to, you know, 5, 6, 10 agents, and then you'd wait, and you'd wait, and you'd wait, and then you get rejections and rejections and rejections. And once you've exhausted the list, you can't go back around again on the same book. And that's the same thing today. So I did a few fantasy novels. I did like a horror novel. I did a supernatural thriller. I did a sci-fi novel, and all of these got rejected. And this is, you know, year after year, rejection after rejection. But whilst this was also going on, the other thing that I was doing was I was attending a lot of events and trying to gather as much information as I could. I'd go to conventions in the UK. I'd listen to other authors talk about how they got published. They'd have editors, they'd have agents speak. And I'd try and just gather as much industry information as I could and try and use that to help me with my next submission, try and learn from what they said. And you could ask them questions and say, well, you know, well, how did you do it? How long did it take you? What happened when you first sent off your book? How many times was it before you got successful? And so it was a real learning curve. So then in about the year 2011-12, I'd had a really close call with a fiction novel. I'd been to the first York Writing Festival. My book was doing very popular. I'd spoken to another published author, and she said, "I think my agent will really like this." And she sent it to the agent, and unfortunately, it didn't go anywhere. So then I started sending it out to other crime agents, and it didn't take off for whatever reason. But so I returned to fantasy, which was my first love. And at this point, the internet had grown up. Things had changed. You could now email agents. You could find out individual information of them. Many agents and agencies have websites, which they still do today. And they also list when their agencies are open and when they are closed, because there's certain parts of the year where they get, you know, 10,000 submissions, and they'll close after 8 months, try and catch up because it's first in, first out, to read through that submission pile, get through them, and then they'll open it up again and say, right, we're now back open for submissions. So things had changed a little bit in that interim from when I first started to about 2012. So I wrote the kind of fantasy book that I really wanted to read. Around 2011-12, I was seeing a lot of almost embarrassment for the genre. Some people were writing fantasy novels where it felt like they had to kind of lure you in. You had to read 200 pages, and it felt more like an historical novel before they suddenly go, oh, and now there's a dragon. Yeah, well, now you're invested. We'll continue reading. And that was, and I thought, well, I'm not embarrassed about the fact that I write fantasy. I love it. Things are a little bit different now, but you still get a little bit of that kind of sneering sentiment. And so I thought, no, I want overt magic in front and center. I want non-human races. I want something really weird and the kind of fantasy books that I loved to read when I was growing up. So I wrote what I wanted to read. Same process again. I worked on the book. I went through it over months and months. I edited it. Then I started doing the homework on the agents, because all of it is now online. A lot of agents are on social media, so you've got direct access to them and you can ask them questions. There's a thing in Twitter, a hashtag called Ask Agent. You can, it comes up every now and then, but if not, you can still go back and look at all of the historic ones. These are where three or four agents will come on for an hour and people just ask them questions direct. And it could be big things and small things, and you'll get answers from two or three or four agents on the same question. So you can go back through the timeline of Twitter and look for some of those. So I sort of stalked a few agents on there to see what they were doing and what kind of thing they're interested in and how they talked about submissions, how they talked about the writers that they worked with. And there again, just trying to learn as much as I could. So I went and found an agent. I looked at various requirements. They asked for a certain number of chapters. Obviously, it's all email these days. There's no more paper. There's no more having to do a self-addressed envelope. It's a lot greener world than it ever was back then. So I worked on my covering letter and I worked on my synopsis. And those are two key things you have to get right. They have to be as word perfect as you can. And I polished them over and over and over again until I could pretty much recite them, because I've done so much time on them. So I decided, right, I'm going to test the water this time. Normally people send out inquiries to a bunch of agents at the same time. I said, right, I'm going to test the water with one agent and just see how it goes. And then I'll send it out to a batch of them. So I sent it off to one agent and I thought, followed the requirements on her website. It said very clearly of what she wanted. And I think it was the first 5,000 words or six chapters or something, but I followed it. And about 3 months later, I got a one line email back that said, please, can you send me the full manuscript? So a little aside, but something important. If an agent says that, this isn't a yes, this isn't a guaranteed yes. There are many reasons that an agent will reject you when they read the full manuscript. It could be that this is a horrible one, but it's true, and I've heard it happen. Some writers have only written the first 5 or 6 or 10 chapters, and then they send it into an agent. Their theory being that if an agent likes the beginning of it, well, they'll obviously like the rest of the book once I've written it. And this is something you should never, ever, ever do, because most of the time the book will change in the writing from where you started to where you end up. Even if you plan your books, it'll be something different when you get to, if you get response. Someone said, well, if an agent never gets response, I'll come on to that later. Most agents will reply to you. So another reason they might not reject you is that if you've spent so much time on those first 5 or 10 chapters and the rest of the book isn't nearly as polished as it could have been, then that's another reason they could reject you, because you spent so long focusing on the start, thinking that if that bit's perfect, they'll go for the rest of it. And you have to think about the book as a whole. You have to have done lots of different kinds of edit on your book to get it into shape. That's really key. Another thing to think about is that I've known some people who are picked up by an agent, but they aren't successful on their first book. So the agent loves it. They champion the book. They think it's brilliant. You would then typically work on the book with the agent to get it ready until they say, right, it's now in a suitable condition that I think we've got the best version to go out to publishers. A friend of mine who has the same agent as me, his first book, I think, was a fantasy book, and they sent it out and nothing happened. All the agents turned him down. And there again, it can be for any number of reasons. It could be that there's just a glut of that particular thing in the market at the time, and this is something you can't predict. They may have had something that's really similar to that on their list, and there again, you can't control that either. It could be that for whatever reason, because it comes down to editors being individuals, they might just sort of say, this isn't right for me. I don't think it's quite right, or I don't think it's commercial. They may love it, but if they can't sell it, then they won't take it forward. So that could be another reason. So, you know, a full manuscript request is great. It's a great first step in the right direction to getting an agent, but it's not a guaranteed yes. Another thing I've seen people do, and sometimes some of these things, I feel silly that I have to say this, but it still happens. Think about it as a job interview. Don't try to be quirky. Don't try to be funny. Don't stalk them and find out what their favorite food is or address and send them a hamper or turn up their office with flowers. I've heard about these horror stories and I just think, why? Why would you do that? So think about it as a job interview. the weird thing about publishing is that it's a creative industry. You are lying to people. You're creating a lie. You're weaving an intricate tale that's supposed to be convincing. And you're then selling that lie to an agent who will then sell it to a publisher so that other people will read it and enjoy this story if it's fiction. But at the same time, as this kind of creative element, there's this commercial element you have to think about. So you have to be kind of strategic in your way that you think about and in the way that you write your books. If you write something that's so difficult, that's so hard to understand, that you really have to challenge the reader, most readers are probably just going to be turned off by it and probably won't go the distance. And the editor will know that and be like, well, we could sell this, but 90% of our audience are going to give up. So therefore, we don't think it's going to go forward. Is it possible to start your own genre or your own subgenre or something that's so radically different or create your own brand? Yes. Does it happen very often? No. If you think about Terry Pratchett, and until he passed away, and probably still to this day, if you try and write comedic fantasy, it's pretty much a no-no. Whilst he was writing the Discworld novels, people would say, it's just a second-rate Terry Pratchett novel. I wouldn't recommend doing it. It's changing a little bit now. Some people create their own genre. China Mieville, who's a science fiction and fantasy writer, writes all sorts of weird and wonderful things. You can't predict what he's going to do next. He's his own genre. He's his own engine. He puts out a book. Publishers say yes, because people see his name and they buy it because he's his own thing. But most of the time, you have to have a commercial kind of awareness and think, if I'm writing this book, where does it sit on the shelf? Who is it similar to? What is it a bit like? Because that is what the publisher will do when they're working out what kind of advance to give you and how they would market it and how they would sell it to potential readers. So if I write a historical novel, a fantasy novel, and someone says, it's a bit like Tim's book, you go, right, that's a touchstone. We know his name in the market. We can maybe get him to do a cover quote. We could see who, you know, his other people that are similar to him are, get them to read it. And it sits on a shelf alongside other things. So people go, okay, I've read all of that stuff. What's this? Who's this new person in the same space? Let's have a look, pull it down. So you've got to think commercially to some degree. So I'm just going to have a drink because I'm thirsty. So read as much as you can about the industry that you're working in, especially about the genre. If you're not reading the genre that you're writing, I would wonder why. Because if you don't know the market, that's something I would question. You don't have to read everything, but you should have some commercial awareness of what's going on. Like, imagine today you wrote a vampire novel about sparkly vampires. One, you're 10 years too late, and two, trying to surf the wave of something else is pointless. But if you see that the market is changing and it's going in a particular direction, and importantly, it is in line with the kind of thing that you're writing, then that can be good. But remember, the books that are coming out now were usually picked up between maybe 2 or even 3 years ago. Sometimes it's shorter depending upon the lead time, but the average lead time for when you hand your book into an agent and it goes to an editor can be 12 months and up. It can be less, but in my experiences, all my books have come out in about a year. So that's kind of the average thing. So do as much as you can. Read as much as you can. Look at the industry magazines. Read at the bookseller news website. That's really good. Attend online events if you can. If there's a magazine on or online thing for the genre that you're writing in, you could look at that. For science fiction and fantasy, there's a big one in America called Locus Magazine. They have a website. They produce articles, interviews, and just try and absorb that kind of commercial aspect because you need to have that in the back of your mind. So back to my story. I'd sent this book off. She wanted to see the full manuscript and got a response from an agent saying she'd be interested in representing me, but she'd like to meet and discuss it first in person. So weirdly, this felt a little bit like a first date because you're kind of feeling each other out. You're thinking, if I'm having a professional working relationship with this person, we've got to be able to get on with each other. We've got to be on the same page. And most importantly, I wanted someone who would champion my work. There were certain things that she said, your book needs work. And I understood that and I appreciated it. And everything that she said made sense. For me, it took me, 13 years from when I started submitting to when I got my agent, from about year 2000 to year 2013. So some of the practicalities of getting an agent. Here are some of the odds. agents get hundreds of submissions every week. They get thousands a year. They have to read those submissions around doing their day job, all of the other stuff that they have to do, looking after the clients, sorting contracts, selling books, negotiating with editors, looking after their agents and keeping them, their writers, and keeping them happy, keeping us happy with things and how things are moving along, all the different stages that your book goes through. So they read around everything. The year that I got picked up, my agent was averaging at about 5,000 submissions that year. She picked up, I think it was 5 clients that year. Her numbers have now gone up, because she's one of the top agents, her numbers have now gone up to about 8,000 submissions a year, and she might take on half a dozen within that year. So those are the kind of odds that you face. It took me 13 years, but from talking to other writers, we all talk about this kind of thing. The average is anywhere from 2 to 10 years to getting an agent and then getting published. It varies. There are some that get picked up on their first book, but the majority do not. So a very big writer you may know of, you may not, is Jessie Burton. She wrote a book called The Miniaturist. It sold in hundreds of thousands of copies. It sold in 25 countries. It's had a BBC drama series made about it. You can go and watch that on iPlayer. She got rejected a dozen times, at least. And any big author you can name has been rejected too, whether it's J.K. Rowling or Stephen King or whoever. They've all been rejected. It's part of the course. It's just part of the thing. So given what I've just said about how difficult it is to get an agent, there's one thing I'm going to highlight, which is you shouldn't say yes to the wrong agent. If my agent, and I'd gone down to meet her, and she said, right, your book is really, really good, but I want it to go off to the left, and blatantly I was thinking the book goes off to the right, she's not the right person for me. You need someone who's going to champion your book and your vision of the book. Someone who's going to come in and say, right, I can see what you're trying to do. I think you can make it better by doing X, Y, and Z. And that's what you want someone to work with. So even though it is difficult, even though it isn't easy, and it's a major step to get an agent, you shouldn't say yes to the right person. One of the biggest concerns I've heard from people about self-publishing versus traditional publishing is that they've said they wouldn't want to go the traditional publishing route because they're afraid it'll have a dilution of the original vision I just sort of touched on. And they're afraid that when they work with an agent and then with an editor, they're going to change the book. And this just isn't true. What they are doing is they're helping you develop the clarity of your vision. When you've been working on a book for months or years, it's a cliche, but it's true. You can't see the wood for the trees. You had your nose pressed up against the page for months and months and months, and you're grafting away on it. You need someone who's able to step back and look at it and say, okay, I can see what you're doing, but this doesn't fit in with the rest. It hasn't been developed, and you trim it back. And it's just like coppicing a tree. You're trimming it back to the kind of the good meat, the sort of the healthy tissue. And that's what a good editor and agent will do. So if you're afraid of that with self-publishing versus traditional publishing, I wouldn't be. So back to my story. We revised the book for a year with my agent. This is me going back and forth with her. She gave me edits and I went back and changed it and back and forth and back and forth. And eventually she said, right, it's ready. She sent it out on exclusive to one publisher, which was Orbit, with a 7-day deal. So that means they have to make a deal within those 7 days. Otherwise, it goes on wide submission to, I think it's 6 or 7 other publishers. Orbit made an offer within that deal, 7 days, and they bought the first trilogy. I then spent another year working on the book with my editor because it just takes that long. There was more changes to be made. She had ideas. We went back and forth. And what Orbit tend to do with their debuts is they bring their books out very quickly. So within 12 calendar months for a debut author, if you've got a trilogy, they bring them out every 6 months. So I was editing book one, writing book two, and doing more detail on book three. So my first book, Battle Mage, came out in September 2015, and then the next one, I think February, and then the following September. I then got another trilogy with Orbit. Because of the time limit, I was given a longer lead time up front. I can no longer write them in the same pace. So the books have come out every year. I've now had the 6 books with Orbit and a digital audio novella. I then got a new 2-book deal with Angry Robot Books. The first one of the new series comes out in June this year. And I'm currently writing on book 9, which is something completely new and different that nobody's seen. So right, I'm just watching the time so I don't go over. So submitting today hasn't really changed. The Writers and Artist Handbook still exists. Now they have a website, but it's still a good starting point. The other thing you can do is look at authors on social media. Many of them mention in their biographies who their agents are. Some of them mention them in the thanks, in their acknowledgements of the books. Many authors have websites. And if you're writing in a certain genre, you know who's doing that kind of genre as well. You can find information on there. But the Writers and Artist Handbook is a really good place for kind of referencing who does what genre. And for heaven's sake, don't submit to an agent that doesn't cover your genre. That's another thing. They'll just delete the email and move on. It still happens. It still happens. Don't be one of those people. So first thing you should do, finish the book, then edit it over and over and over again. Read the submission guidelines really, really carefully of all of the agents. Tailor it specifically to them. If they say they want 5,000, someone wants 6,000, give them exactly what they want and send it out to a handful of agents and see what happens. So remember the odds. You want to give them as few excuses as possible to reject you. If you haven't researched their name and you put dear sir slash madam, it's gone. If you're lazy, if you don't follow the rules and they say 10,000%, 20,000, they're not going to chase you up. They don't have time. They'll delete the email and move on because somebody has followed the rules and done it. These days in fantasy, the market is much bigger than ever before. You can go onto the websites and see the number of books that that are coming out every year. So I'm published by Orbit. My first six books were. They have offices in the UK, in London, in New York, and they have a branch out in Australia. So my book was published in English language worldwide. So in the UK, it was published in paperback, and you get this kind of a sized book. America print their own books of the same equivalent. So it's a bit bigger. The paper quality isn't as good. The cover's a bit different, but Americans just like something a bit chunkier for whatever reason. So you can see there's a bit of a difference between the two. I don't know why. That's just it. My books were then sold to other countries. So they were published in France. That's the French one of the first book, in German. And my agent negotiated each of these individual deals with all of the territories. Oh, and also in Russia as well. And there's a Russian cover floating out there too. Now, some publishers, so Orbit, as I said, are worldwide, but some of them are not. So Gollancz is another big fantasy publisher in the UK. What they will tend to do is partner with an American publisher. So it could be that you publish by Gollancz in the UK, and as part of your original contract, you'd be published in America by Door or Penguin or Angry Robot or somebody else. But the book still comes out at the same time on the same day, usually within a couple of days of each other, slightly different format, but the text inside is the same. So Tim mentioned that some of you are obviously interested in writing fantasy. First thing, obviously, do your homework, read the genre, look at who's publishing what, look at what's coming out, go on YouTube, look at interviews, find out what people are saying. Obviously, there's the international rights, which I've talked about. That will come out through your agent. That's after the initial deal. Some commercial awareness, I think, is really important. You find out more when you get into it to do with royalties and advances and that sort of stuff. I don't need to worry too much about contracts and that side of it. Whereas if you're self-publishing, you have to kind of handle all of that yourself, the marketing and the PR. We're quite lucky in the UK. When I went to France and spoke to some French authors, there were no agents in France. If you're an author in France, you have to do it all yourself. You have to negotiate the contract and work it out and do all the legal stuff yourself, which is I can see Tim already getting worried about that. Yeah, it's a real pain. I was sort of thinking, oh God, I'm glad I'm not in France for this particular reason. But wow, that was a struggle. So do your homework as much as you can. I'll finish with a little bit about writing as a career. So some authors will sell really big on their first series. They'll sell a huge book, hundreds of thousands of copies. And if they wanted to, they could never write again. The truth is, the majority of writers have full or part-time jobs. It's just part of the deal because we don't sell enough to make a living out of the gate. Writing, just like writing a book, building a career as an author is a bit like a marathon. You have to build up a body of work. You have to grow your fan base. You have to sell your international rights. If you're lucky, you might get an option, but 99% of the time out of 100, that's just free money because sometimes they buy the rights for things so that somebody else can't buy them. So you take the free money and you smile and you say, thank you very much. And all this just takes time. But let's pretend for a second. Let's say on your first book, you sell 1 million copies, what, and you become a household name and you've got enough money to live on for a decade and you don't have to worry about it. What are you doing now? Why did you start writing in the first place? Was the goal just to make money? Jessie Burton, as I mentioned, sold huge amounts of, if she wanted to, she could never write another book again in her life. Since then, she's had, I think, 3 or 4 books out. Because writing is a career. Writing is something you progress and get better at. The more books you do, the more time you put into it, the better you become. So like anything else, it takes time and effort and practice. The other thing I'd say is, what kind of an author do you want to be? Some just want to tell entertaining stories, and there's nothing wrong like that with that. Sometimes you sit down and watch TV and film and it just washes over you, and that's all you're in the mood for. Some people want to push the boundaries of the genre that they're writing in. Some want to stimulate thought-provoking conversations or deep philosophical issues or tackle things that are in the zeitgeist at the moment. The best science fiction and fantasy is all about holding up a mirror to the real world and using it to explore an idea through a lens that is slightly askew. And that's what some people do. So I recently did an interview with a younger author, and I asked him this question and said, you know, what kind of writer did you want to be? And I think I kind of caught him off guard because he hadn't really thought about it. He wanted to write the book and get it out because that was the story that was in his head. But when I said to him, well, what kind of writer do you want to be? He didn't really know. So I think I had to go away and think about it. He writes because he enjoys it and he feels compelled to. That's fine. If that's all you want to do, then great. So my last point is, I would encourage you to think about these questions now. Think about what kind of writer you want to be as you start go down this path. What is your end goal? If getting published is your end goal, great. But what comes after that? What do you do next? And where do you want to go? I've talked myself hoarse, so I'm done. I'm done there.
Oh, thank you so much, Stephen. Really, really, really useful stuff. Really, really interesting. You know, I've got some questions of my own. I'm sure other people...
I saw some popping up and I was glancing. I'll answer them as we go.
Yeah. I'll turn to them now. And so a couple of questions from Carlotta. The first one was, how far along were books 2 and 3 when you got a deal with Orbit? So yeah, so you've got the deal, you know, so you've got the trilogy deal, obviously, but
yes.
how much was written at that point?
So the first book was obviously completely done. I had detailed notes on the second book and ideas for book 3, maybe a page of ideas. But here's the thing, when you go in with that first book, even though it's a trilogy, everything is about that first book. They said, you know, what I said, oh, do you want to know about books 2 and 3? And they said, yeah, give us a bit of his idea. So I wrote a page on book 2, and I'm not kidding, 3 lines on book 3. They didn't really care about book 3 until we got to it. And then they said, right, where's the first draft? What is this book actually about? And I based it on an idea of a few lines, and I then developed it. So whilst book 1 was being edited, I was writing book 2 in full and planning more of book 3, and then we switched. So at one point I was doing 3 books at the same time at different stages. That was a very busy 2 years, very busy. But they gave me a longer lead time up front so that the books could come out every 6 months. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to sustain that pace.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, that's also been my experience as well. You know, I've signed a couple of multi-book deals, and they always want less than I think they would in terms of like extra material. So like, are you sure? Yeah. So like, they want because the divergence between the first book, ultra polished, really well worked out, kind of.
Yep.
The entire thing is there, and then yeah, it's usually like 1 page for book 2, and maybe something that's else it. For another book. It's like
totally, yeah.
Yeah, they're remarkably calm about it in that kind of regard. But they want to land heavy with the first. They want to be complete. You know, if they have complete confidence in the first book, they usually think you can do the rest of it as well. It will kind of fall on from there.
Absolutely.
The next question was: do you have an Italian translator? And how does your agent source your translators, or is that through the UK foreign publisher? I'm also interested in translating fantasy both ways.
Okay, so there are 2 main events within the publishing calendar. There's the Frankfurt Book Fair and the London Book Fair. And this is where agents from other territories and publishers would go. It's not for the public. It's not something you can really go along to. And what my agent will do is she will essentially, it sounds weird, but she has kind of speed dating sessions with foreign publishers where you have 15 minutes with someone. So she'll sit down with the head of the French publishing company, the German, the Swiss, and go through them all. And in 15 minutes or so, she will talk through her list of clients, what the book is about, how well it's selling, what's going on. And based upon that pitch, they will then request to see the book in English, and then they'll read it, and if they like it, they will then say, right, we'll buy it. So I don't see any of this. And what will happen is I would then receive an advance from the French publisher for the book or the trilogy. They pay all the costs for translation and everything else, and I then earn royalties once I've recouped that advance in sales. And so that's kind of, I'm pretty hands off with the foreign rights. I don't see much. Occasionally I might be contacted by the translator who would say, can we clarify this word, or what do you mean by this sentence, or we don't have an equivalent of that in French. So I think one of the phrases I used was power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. He said, we don't have that in French, can we change it to something else? And I said, yeah, fine, you know, it doesn't resonate with them, so they had no idea what it would mean. So little things like that. But most of the time I just say, right, here's the German book, brilliant, what's the cover, there you go, are you happy with that, okay. And I get a handful of copies that I can send to my German friends if they want it for read. But otherwise, I don't really see much.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So the next question was, can you give some advice? There's kind of two questions that I'll combine together. Yeah. Can you give some advice on writing cover letters and summaries? Also, how does writing the summary work if you're pitching a trilogy/series?
So the covering letter is all about that first book. You would probably mention very briefly that it is part of a trilogy. The other thing to say about fantasy these days is the size of series has shrunk dramatically. The last person who got a 10-book series, bar one or two exceptions, was probably Adrian Tchaikovsky. And the only reason he got that far is he'd written four to begin with when he went in with the first one. So they sort of took him on for three books and then three and three. Typically, it's trilogies or duologies. So you would mention probably a little bit. So it's all about that first book. On my website, and I think... my covering letter is there. There's a long two parts thing on my website about how I found an agent, and it's got the back and forth from my agent. So my initial letter of inquiry to her, with a couple of bits redacted to avoid spoilers, her feedback on what she said, what she liked and what she didn't like and what needed work, and then the back and forth correspondence. And you can see it's the synopsis is, I hate writing covering letters. I hate writing synopsis. It's difficult. You have to sum, you know, 100,000 words up in less than a page. And what you're trying to get across is you as a person, your knowledge in the area that you're writing in. So I mentioned that I've been reading fantasy for decades only because there were tropes in the first book and I was subverting them. So that's as much as I needed to say. I didn't need to show my geek card and show my book collection. So it's that kind of level of, you know, maybe you're a philosophy major and you're writing a book that's science fiction, but it's based upon philosophy. You would say that I've studied philosophy for 4 years, or whatever it might be. The synopsis is the hardest thing. You've got to sum up the whole book and the whole story in usually a page. I still struggle with it now. I still hate doing it. It's so difficult. I don't know about you, Tim, how you feel about them.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've just kind of accepted it as being, I talk to my students sometimes about, if you're feeling bad about it, go and read Wikipedia plot summaries of really famous books. And they always sound woeful, you know, because it's often when you, I mean, that's, I think it's, you know, when you break a story down and it's in that very bare bones, so-and-so goes to here and meets such and such, and then this happens, and then this happens. It just usually, even the greatest book just sounds like this, like, deeply dull series of events, essentially. But I always think that it's just about, like, they just want to see what the major story beats are, you know. It doesn't, yes, have to be pretty, and it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to have all the beautiful, you know, writing and character work and that kind of thing that actually makes the book work. They just want to see a kind of structural outline a lot of the time, I think.
But you have to tell them the whole story. Don't leave them hanging in suspense. You explain the full story and you explain the twist and you explain what the focus of the book is about. So you don't kind of leave them hanging. They're not the right person to leave hanging. That's marketing. Yeah. That's later.
Yeah, so. it's the same because you mentioned in your query letter that you'd redacted for spoilers in that kind of way. Because again, that's often the thing, that you're doing a kind of blurby pitch, aren't you, in the query letter?
Yeah.
But it's not a blurb because you're also happy to say this is the big twist of the book, because that's also, yes, what the agent is going to be interested in reading it.
Yeah, I've redacted it on my website just if someone reads that covering letter and go, well, you've given it away now. I know what it's all about. I don't need to read the book. So. Yeah. But it's on there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll open up the chat for more questions. I mean, one question that I'm always fascinated in, because it's just such a weird part of the process, is how do we keep going as writers? Because, you know, you talked about this really long road of this kind of 13 yep. years of writing books and, you know, shopping books out there, getting your one-page rejections, which, you know, everyone has a version of it. Like you say, it can be, this time span varies, but it's usually yes. a lot of time. And, you know, past the point where a normal human being would go, you know what, I've had enough of being punched in the face by the universe. I'm going to do something else. So what was it that kind of kept you going through those kind of like long, lean years?
That's a good question. Part of it, you have to be self-deluded enough to believe that you have something interesting to say that people want to read about. That's part of it. It's almost like you have to have a bit of an ego without being an egomaniac, because whether you self-publish it or you're working with the traditional publishing method, your book will be edited and it will be corrected and it will be made better from what you've done. But at the same time, you have to have belief in what you've produced, that there's something interesting there. And I just kept thinking that there is something interesting here. They don't really exist now, but there were writing forums where you tend to post a chapter, you'd have to read and review three other people's, and then they'd review yours, and that kind of to and fro. And you'd get feedback. I'd get feedback from other writers. I'd get feedback from, you know, friends. And obviously, your friends are always going to say, oh, well, it's brilliant. Or your mom, it's the best book I've ever read, Tim. But but in reality, it's probably not the best book they've ever read. So you want someone who's going to give constructive feedback. And I had some people who would read it and say, this works, this doesn't work, or this is really good. So you want that kind of honest feedback and criticism. But stubborn determination, ego, maybe, that's what kept me going over the years.
Yeah, that crucial balance between sort of like
egomaniac
and humility. it's that key sort of like sweet spot that most writers have, I think, you know, in that
yeah,
kind of way.
Definitely. Yeah, a bit of humility, because you know you're going to have your book worked on by many hands before it goes out. So
yeah, I really liked that, what you said about, because that was very much my experience as well in terms of working with the agent, about it becoming more of your own vision in that sort of sense, you know, that sort of
yes.
sense of it being like, you've come to the end of being like, oh no, you've seen what I'm trying to do, and you, it's not that you have diluted my vision, it's that you have allowed me to clarify and focus it sort of further in that way, which has been
yeah.
for me the best, I don't know about for you, almost the best part of the process in that sense.
It's the same, because if you self-publish it, so my friend Ben Galley, you know, he pays an editor who will read his book, who has no connections to him whatsoever, and that person will give him their absolute honest opinion on Belden's book and say what works and doesn't, and Ben has to go away and then fix it. He can't just ignore it. If somebody's paid this person to do a job, he'd be a fool to ignore it. And on my first book, I think I had a side story that didn't really go anywhere. And it was one of these things, though, even though I planned my book, it came up in a moment and I wrote it and it went into the book. And when it came to my editor, she said, this kind of doesn't really go anywhere. It's interesting, but it doesn't fit with the overall theme of the rest of the book. So we'd suggest you trim it out and it'd be a lot tighter and leaner. And I said, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And reading it at a distance and having some time away from the book really helps as well. So yeah, it's been a positive experience for me. I mean, there's always compromise. Sometimes you can push back. So I think it was on my fourth book, my editor came to me and said, I don't see why this character needs to be there. They're not really that important. In my head, they're vital. They're really important. What are you saying? And I went back and looked what was actually on the page. And there's a gap between what's in your head and what's on the page, because you spent so long living with these characters and thinking about it. And when I read what was actually there, it wasn't particularly clear. So I beefed up to what I was compared to what was in my head to what was on the page. And the second time she said, okay, I can totally see why now. And I was like, right, because that's what I originally had, but I hadn't communicated that clearly enough in the actual manuscript. So.
Excellent, excellent. Any other questions anyone wants to drop in the chat? Again, I've got more of my own that I'll kind of continue with, but anyone who wants to stick a hand up or wants to type anything in the chat. I mean, because one question I was going to have is about what's your sense of like the, because you mentioned that the fantasy market had kind of changed a bit over the time that you've kind of been working in it in that kind of way.
Yeah.
What's your sense of like, do you have a feeling for kind of what's kind of happening in it now? You know, you said it's kind of moved away from big series down to smaller ones. Are there any other kind, or that the kind of stuff that you were working in wasn't necessarily as prevalent then, perhaps? You felt that it was a slightly more embarrassed for its genre, and you feel it's maybe less so now?
There is less so. I think some of the really popular things on television and film, Game of Thrones and all the rest of it, has opened the doors a little bit. But you still get some people who write literary fiction sneering at those who write science fiction and fantasy, which I don't really get, you know. But another thing they're doing very much in fantasy now is they want more diversity. They want more interesting, unique and original voices. Fantasy was starting to get a bit homogenized. no one particularly to blame, because the people who work in publishing are very diverse, but enough people weren't sending in material. So now it's changing. Now they're having, they want more diverse voices. They're generating particular competitions to encourage people to come and write. Gollancz did one recently for BAME writers to come in, have their first five chapters or 10 chapters written, read by professionals, and then one of them would get a book deal. And that happened last year. And Ben Aronovich kind of spearheaded it through Gollancz. And there are other things like that coming up. People will get bored of reading the same thing. And so I think more diversity, more interesting voices, different points of view from different world views, whether it's, I mean, not all, but a lot of fantasy is set within a kind of medieval-ish westernized setting. And some people love it and still read it, great. But some people are like, can we have something a bit different? And there's a lot more of that now coming into the genre, which is really good to see, because it's fresh and interesting and really exciting.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, I've got a couple of questions here. First one I'll go through is, I ask this all the time, if I am writing in two very different genres, non-fiction memoir and fantasy, fiction fantasy, should I look for two different agents?
Yes. Most of the time, genre agents will only handle very specific things. They'll list on their website their interests. So my agent will sort of, I think it says on her website what bits she covers, and she'll say what she doesn't cover. If they've got an overlap of the two that you write, then fair enough, you could approach an agent who does both. But I would then approach different agents. I mean, and you can mention in your letter, just in passing, that you also write something and it's gone to a different agent, that kind of thing. That's fine, but I would go to different agents.
Yeah, and so the follow-up question was, is it okay to go to different agencies?
Yes.
I suppose, yeah. As long as you communicate with everyone what's going on.
As long as, you're not hiding the truth, then I'd say that's fine. You communicate what you're doing.
Mm. Yeah. So I suppose it might be, if there are a bigger agency as well, it might be the case that they might have someone down the hall who might be able to handle, sort of another aspect of it,
Yeah, like some people will only do like lifestyle and cookery and other things. Another person will do genre, another person will do science fiction and fantasy, and it's all within the same company. So technically they can stick their head out of the office, but I'd still, I'd let people know. And then that's fine. As long as you tell people what you're doing, I don't see a problem.
Excellent, excellent. So another question was, asking about that gap between the mind and the page is extremely relatable. I think we were talking about the character, like he was.
It always happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, would you say this ever goes away was the question.
No, which is why you need other people. The best thing to do, which people struggle with this when I tell them to, they don't believe me. The best thing you can do once you've written a book is to put it away and to take a break and not even go on to writing something else straight away, because you're using the same muscles. I would say take a break of at least 2 weeks and do no writing at all whatsoever. Go and, spend some time with the kids, go outdoors, go for a walk, COVID permitting, all the rest of it. Do something physical, just rest your brain completely, do no writing, take a break, because when you come back to it, you don't exactly have fresh eyes, but you will have forgotten certain things that you've put in there, and you'll be able to sort of see more of what you were trying to do, which is the same as when you start writing a book, if you plan your book, you know where you're going at the beginning. When you get to the end, you look back at the start, and what often happens is I will say, oh, I can see what I was trying to do now that I've spent 12 months writing it, but that's not quite right. I can now tweak this. And it's part of the journey of writing the book. I hate that word, but it's true. Everyone goes on a journey. You're all on a journey. Podcasts are on a journey. But in your mind, you're progressing and changing as you work through the manuscript. And so you can have these weird diversions come off. And it's taking time, rest your brain, rest those muscles, come back and try and look at it with slightly fresh eyes, I think is really key.
Yeah, but I think every writer would talk about that. The gap doesn't go away. You get to maybe narrow it a bit with time. And like you say, you learn methods for being able to kind of cross that distance in that kind of way.
Definitely.
But it remains, an ever-present challenge. Again, any other questions, drop them in the chat. I mean, one that I was going to ask about was, again, in that period of, trying to get an agent, that kind of sense, what do you think were the big changes that occurred in your writing, in that kind of time? What were the things that you felt, like 2000, Stephen versus like 2013 kind of Stephen? What were some of the big, key things that you think that you learned in that kind of period that you changed?
I think at the beginning, there's always a little bit of imitation because if you're reading with a genre, it's not that you're copying someone, it's just that there's something that people are doing that you like, that you try and fold into your own work, which is fine, but it's all about finding your own style and what you're actually passionate about. If you're, you know, if you're trying to copy something, they'll know it. If you're not enthusiastic about what you're writing, they'll know it. It'll come through in a page. And so writing about something that you're really interested in will come through in the writing. And at the beginning, I was really passionate about fantasy, but I don't think I really understood the industry enough. I didn't understand what it meant to write a book in the same way as it does now. Because obviously now I write and I've got deadlines and it's very different. I think it took me, I don't know, 5 years to write the first book. Now it'll, you know, it takes a year. And it's part of building up muscles, getting your brain in a particular mindset on how you write. Because I know some people say, right, I'm going to write a book, and they'll do, 4 hours on a Sunday, every Sunday, and they'll sit down and try and write. And that's their thing. And I think that's not a good way to start, because you have to build up like anything else with writing. So you could write for 20 minutes, three times a week, and see how that goes. If that's comfortable and you don't get distracted and the doorbell doesn't go, you don't feel you're drifting off, stretch it to half an hour. And part of my journey was learning how to concentrate and focus my mind and trick myself into a mindset of knowing that, right, if I'm at this keyboard and I'm doing, this is what I'm doing, I'm writing. And music plays a key for me. I use 99% of the time I write with music. It's always soundtracks. And part of it is tricking my brain. My brain's like, right, I'm at this desk, I'm at this keyboard, I've got this music on, I must be doing the writing thing. And over time, you build up muscles that way as well. Other ways, I'm trying to think how I've developed. It's practice. If I look back at my first novel, I'll probably see the idea that I was trying to do, but it wasn't executed very well. Now I think I could potentially harvest the idea, but I wouldn't harvest the book, because I just think, oh, that's awful. You know, the dialogue would just sound clunky, or it doesn't feel authentic, or it doesn't sound real, or I'm just trying to copy somebody else's style, you know.
Excellent, excellent. So I've got a quick question, which is, are there many publishers that take direct submissions?
Occasionally, yes. The Angry Robot, who's my current series, they will occasionally have an open window. Gollancz do sometimes, but it's very rare. They did it, I think, last time. It wasn't last year, so it must have been either 2018 or 2019. They'll advertise it on their website. They'll advertise it on their social media, so follow them on there if you're not. And they basically said, right, we're going to, this many words, this is the genres that we're interested in, send it in within this 1 month window, then they close it, and then they'll just work through it. But most of the time, no, most of them will say, you can only submit to us through an agent. But every now and then, they will open the doors.
Excellent. Yeah, that's been my. You see it, okay, but it is quite an event, isn't it? It's
like they make it, yeah, a big thing.
Yeah. Tor is opening its things for this month.
Yes.
Got a really definitely. Good question. That might be a really good one. We might get another one in, but this would be might be a good one to finish on, which is the fantasy embarrassment issue is something that hit me quite hard. I love fantasy. I've read it since childhood and still do. I'm writing fantasy, but get a bit sheepish about it. How do I give myself permission to have fun with the genre and write it without inhibitions?
Oh, that is a good question. Spend time within the community. Social media, talk to other writers, talk to editors, agents on there, you know, go on the forums, go on YouTube, follow the people and just talk to them and surround yourself with the kind of people who love the thing that you do and aren't embarrassed by it. I mean, I write fantasy. My mum has read my books. She doesn't read fantasy. The first book is called Battle Mage. It's all about a war. And her first comment was, well, there's an awful lot of killing. And I was like, well, oh, okay. Yes. And that's the kind of thing you kind of face sometimes where people, they don't get it. Even with the big things, even with the Game of Thrones and that kind of thing, some people still look a bit sheepish. A friend of mine recently in Australia, when he said he wrote fantasy, someone said, what, do you mean erotica? And he's like, no, more like swords and sorcery fantasy. And they're like, oh, okay. Different kind of fantasy. Surround yourself with the kind of people that love the thing that you do. That's the best thing you can do. Spend time with them, listen to them, go to the events when they start back up again. So I go to events like the British Fantasy Society run events, mostly online at the moment, but they'll start doing stuff in person. There's something called Bristol Con. That's a one-day thing once a year. Easter Con is an annual thing that happens. There are other ones that crop up. I've done some online conventions recently. I did one called TBR Con just last month. So there's about a dozen panels you can see of us talking about it. I'm doing another one in April called QuarrenCon for staying the F at home. All about people. So it is sometimes when people sort of talk about that kind of thing, but it's like, if people talk to me about football, I kind of glaze over, and I treat this the way that they would treat me about fantasy as if they treat football. I just kind of doze off, and I'm like, so you kick the ball, you run, is that it? You run around a field. Sounds a bit boring. You know, I mean, it's that level of stupidity, but you know, I can be petty. Why not?
I really love that, but yeah, because I think, you know, I really love the idea to, you know, finding your community in that sort of sense, you know, which is the idea.
Absolutely. Around, you know, find your tribe.
This. And, you know, I think how you're having confidence in the things that you love as well. It's like, I love this thing, and I believe that other people also love this thing that I love. And so we will get together and share and enjoy the thing that we love in that sort of way.
Yeah, it's fantasy is brilliant. It's, as I said, it's about holding up a mirror to the real world to tell different stories. That's what it's all about. And the best science fiction fantasy does that. And the best science fiction moves science on and technology. And, you know, things that come up now, they're taking for granted. You know, iTunes, video conferencing. So... if you go back to, I think it's Fahrenheit 451, written by Ray Bradbury, 1957, Tim, or 60-something? Oh, yeah. He had an answering machine. There's no such thing. He had video conferencing. No such thing. He created it from his imagination. Now look at us. You know, why not? What's not cool about that? We've made it a reality because we dreamed it first.
I love it. Love it. And that seems like a really nice note to kind of finish on there. But yeah, thanks. You know, sort of like, but thanks so much again, like really, really good stuff. Really, really lovely insights there and great questions as well. Thank you to everyone who's kind of, who's come along. And thank you. A helpful website for tracking. Oh, we've got a barrage of cool stuff happening in the chat as well.
Light Aware is another one to look at. That's a really good place that tells you if agents are dodgy or not.